My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler. Armistice Day, the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. The cessation of combat exercises in the first war, the Great War at the time. The Marines were in the front line. The Marines were in the front line at the beginning of the U.S. expedition into the Great War. They crossed a field into what was then Belleau Wood. That describes the Marine Corps and their participation in the war that ended 11th day, 11th month, 11th hour. However, here we are in the 21st century celebrating 250 years of the Marine Corps, and I welcome a veteran Marine colonel, Colonel Grant Newsham, author of When China Attacks, to comment on not only then, 1917, 1918, but now, 2025, and the Marines on the front lines, facing the unknown, especially in the Caribbean. Grant, a very good day to you. Happy birthday, Marine Corps, but the Belleau Wood is not a happy memory for the Marine Corps. Then again, it does represent what the Marines have always presented themselves to be, defenders of the U.S. Your time in the Marine Corps, how would you describe it to young people listening to us right now? What did it do for you? What did it do for your colleagues? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. My time in the Marine Corps, I would characterize it as fun. Maybe that's not the usual way to describe it, but it is a lot of interesting things you get to do. You get a lot of opportunities, of course, to sort of see a bit of the world and see some interesting people. But ultimately, there's a huge sense of satisfaction in having sort of met the standards to be able to join the Marines, to call yourself a Marine. And there is a requirement, of course, that one conducts themselves as a Marine. And it's really something that I think a lot of people wonder if they could do. And if they sort of have the nerve to give it a try, I think a lot of them could be surprised. The Marine Corps does take very regular Americans and turns them into Marines. And ultimately, these are the kind of people who prevailed at Belleau Wood. It's amazing anybody got across that wheat field, but the Marines were victorious. And then World War II, throughout the Pacific, the Marines sort of did the impossible. Korea, the same thing. Vietnam, and more recently in Iraq, Afghanistan. And the quality of Marines today is as good as it's ever been. The challenge, of course, is always the senior leadership, if they're able to sort of employ the Marines properly and have success. But the young officers, the enlisted, the NCOs, staff NCOs, those are always excellent. The Marines are in one sense, they're in good shape. In another sense, they've faced some challenges today that they haven't faced for a while.
Yes, not since Belleau Wood, because we have unknowns here with two adversaries, a three-body problem. Let's go to the Caribbean and put it into action. I'm told there's a very large fleet gathering. For example, the news in these last hours is the Gerald R. Ford, a super carrier, and its battle group have arrived in the region, joining a flotilla of Arleigh Burke-class destroyers and one cruiser, I believe, with lots of missiles on board. Air Force elements, B-52s, B-2s, F-35s, the whole library. But there's a MEW attached. What is a MEW? What does it represent?
Well, John, a MEW is called a Marine Expeditionary Unit. And it's pretty much about 2,000 Marines who are combined with usually three amphibious ships, and they're able to sail anywhere that a ship can go. It's about 600-700 infantry with their supporting weapons, and then there's an aviation component of that as well. So you've got fixed-wing helicopters and infantry and all the logistic support that comes with this. So you can obviously move it anywhere on Earth, And they can do anything from humanitarian assistance to killing people and everything in between. And it's immensely flexible. It's a very useful tool for any commander to have. A problem they have these days is the shortage of amphibious ships. Amphibious ships is not a high priority for the Navy. It hasn't been for a long time. And as a result, the Marines don't have anywhere near enough to have three MEUs always on the station, always on deployment, like they used to have. Now that you find in some instances there are no MEUs available for deployment because there aren't enough amphibious ships. Why is that the case? Well, besides the Navy not prioritizing it, it's not leprechauns. And really, the most senior Marine leadership should have been raising merry hell with Congress for years about this. They've dropped the ball on this, and somehow one hopes that we can recover from it. But having that capability on hand for any commander gives you a lot of options if you want to, as I say, either go help people or go hurt people.
Well, with birthday cake on our lips, let's ask for more, Grant. Let's go to what you've instructed me to be the new thinking at the Marine Corps about their role, especially in East Asia in the event of warfare.
The Marines, you'll find it in the Asia Pacific, you could find them having to do everything that I've just described, from humanitarian assistance to intelligence collection, rescuing downed pilots, to actually deploying this battalion-sized force from the amphibious ships. I think you could see them particularly used in, say, seizing some key terrain and holding it or driving a Chinese landing force away from it, and using some of their long-range precision weapons to control an area that really helps the larger U.S. campaign get underway. So it's got a number of things it can do. One problem is that in recent times, the Marines have decided that they're going to prioritize putting small sort of missile units on different islands in the Pacific and take shots at any Chinese ships that come by. And what that does is it reduces your ability to do all of the other missions that the Marines are required. And as a result, the Marines perhaps today are not quite as not as versatile as they were. The capability is there, but the Marines gave up a lot of combat power and a lot of resources in order to support this missile unit scheme that was thought up. I think they've recognized they probably went too far into trying to reconstitute some of the aircraft and infantry and other support that they gave up, thinking that this show of good faith would make them friends in Congress and get them more money. Well, it perhaps didn't. That's what they could do in a war. They're not going to invade China, but there are many ways you can employ them to take terrain and to keep people away from it and to operate their weaponry from land and close off a lot of maritime territory for the Chinese. You can easily do this if you're operating, say, from the northern Philippines. You can reach all the way up to Taiwan, from southern Japan, the southern islands. Some of these long-range weapons can reach out quite a ways and present the Chinese with a huge problem. I would note, of course, that that's in the event of a shooting war. And in the lead-up to a war, you do have to do all of these things, the peacetime engagement, humanitarian assistance, just getting out and about and demonstrating that America's there, they're going to need to be taken seriously, and if necessary, that they're going to be, well, hell to pay if you get the Americans mad.
Colonel Grant Newsham, United States Marine Corps, retired.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.